And welcome back. Talking with Michael Roll and scientist Ron Pearson live in Britain. It's very early in the morning, but they sound on top of their game, as they always do. It doesn't matter what time of day or night. All right, a few more questions for Ron Pearson.
Hi, Ron.
This invisible background medium. Now, we've been talking a little bit about Einstein's theory, which you agree is headed toward not the ash heap, but a position of reverence in the museum of outdated theories at some point, and you say it's long overdue. There are people talking about super string theories and all the rest of it. I guess even Professor Stephen Hawking, though, admits that there are some perhaps fatal flaws in quantum physics as we know them today. Is that accurate?
Oh, yes. If anyone reads his famous book called A Brief History of Time, you look on page 11, and sometimes page 12,
mm-hmm.
he says, talking about the getting the match between quantum theory and relativity theory.
Okay.
He says, it is well known that these theories do not fit together.
They're inconsistent.
So one of them must be wrong.
Yeah. One of them must be wrong.
That there's something wrong there.
Now, if there's something wrong,
the rest
Ron,
of the book he uses to tell how they're trying to match them up. Well, it's no good trying to match them up to say one of them is wrong.
All right. Now, let me rephrase that. You're right, and I understand. Hawking says one of them is wrong, and yet physicists around the world continue to spend their energy spinning their wheels, some might say, trying to match these things up, which even Professor Hawking says are inconsistent with one another. They can't match up at some point or another. There's a big problem there.
Yes. This is a big puzzle because they're still trying to match them up after 70 years of effort without any success whatever.
And they won't listen to Ron Pearson and his ideas or anyone else at this point, although that's going to change in time. They're going to have to. If they can never be fitted together, and we do need a different approach, such as your own, where do we get to that point of breakthrough when others will have to listen to it? How are we going to do that?
Well, that's a good question. I think by shows like yours, because the scientific community won't listen. They're all stuck on this particular problem.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I had a rejection letter from the Canadian Journal of Physics, dated about 1989, and it simply rejects the work on the grounds that I haven't started by accepting relativity theory. What I'd done was give them a theory which matched every one of the checks which is supposed to support relativity, and did away with the problem because it showed there was complete compatibility. And the rejection letter simply says you haven't started relativity theory, which is mandatory, and this is what most of the rejection letters did. They just say you have to start with relativity. No one's going to listen unless you do. they're making ground rules which prohibit at the present time any breakthrough.
I understand. They're making ground rules to support their flawed model is what they're doing, which science has done in the past and will probably do, who knows, for how long.
There are two problems. One is the Big Bang Theory, which is not only full of logical errors,
uh-huh.
but it gives also a hopelessly false prediction. And the worst of these is called the cosmological constant. They have all the matter and energy in the universe appearing from nothing in a blinding flash of creation, but then they can't find any way of switching off this explosion they've invented. So it still goes on pushing the galaxies apart at huge rates, billions and billions of times greater than they know is remotely possible. And in my opinion, the theory should never have passed peer review.
Huh.
So that's one problem,
mm-hmm.
Which completely destroys the validity of all the scenarios which they portray. they portray various scenarios and predict that the universe is 12 billion years old. Yet astronomers find out that the, some stars in remote galaxies are at least 7 billion years older than that. In other words, they're 19 billion years old. Mm-hmm. So we've got a situation with stars 19 billion years old existing in a universe only 12 billion years old. And so it's got difficulties of this kind. So it should never have been accepted. And this is the kind of thing which turned me on. It just had to have a different solution.
Okay, so what do we call this invisible background medium? You like to call it the ether.
I call it, I put an I in front of it, because the ether which I come up with is quite different from the ether of the existing theories.
Okay, it's ether with an I in front of it, I ether. What? Tell us, why is it different?
Well, I call it, well, it's different in this respect. It has to get rid of this cosmological constant problem, I found the only way of doing it was to have a background medium consisting of opposite kinds of energy, which can be called positive energy and negative energy. They had to coexist together.
In the same medium, all right?
Yeah, as a mixture.
Well, like magnetism in a way. That's being crude, but okay, so we have a balance.
It's got polarity.
Gotcha.
The two energies. And then I found that by two laws of physics, they were collision. This mixture of energy, the energies were actually confined to minute particles. They were tiny particles, which I call primaries. And these particles, some are made from positive energy, and the rest are made from negative energy, which has nothing to do with electric charge. I won't go into the details of what this is, but the study showed, the mathematical study showed, that when in collision, when you got pair collisions, in other words, opposites collided, they were forced to increase energies of their own kind. Each gained energy. The positive ones gained positive energy, and the negative ones gained negative energy, and this gave you a much more satisfactory solution for creation. This was this was creation coming out of the mathematics without any logical errors.
Mm.
And also, you could get, under certain conditions, you could get annihilation as well. When you had large numbers coming from all directions at once, then you got annihilation.
Okay.
And this resulted in a filamentous structure. So it did two things, in fact. First of all, it gave you a completely different picture as far as the universe is concerned. It gave you straight away a universe in a state of everlasting, ever accelerating expansion.
Uh-huh.
And this, to my great delight, subsequently proved to be the case, because in 1998, studies of remote supernovas showed, in fact, that the acceleration of the universe was, the expansion was in fact accelerating, which is something totally unexpected as far as the cosmologists was concerned, because they considered it to be decelerating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that confirmed that the theory. But it also showed that the universe had to have been growing for far longer than 12 billion years allowed by the Big Bang. In fact, I've explored it back 100 billion years, and it's still half the size it is now, even 100 billion years ago. It's almost indefinitely old. And so this problem about some of the stars being older than the universe, of course, it also disappears, together with the cosmological constant, which has vanished. So it's killed three major problems have been resolved by this.
All quickly, all without any particularly catharsis, it's logic, and it's all right there. Now, let me go back to this issue again of annihilation resulting in the spontaneous formation of a fine-grained filamentous, as in filament, network.
Yes.
Now, this is your eye ether.
That's right. I was just going to come on to that. In fact, this annihilation, which accompanies the process
which is going on constantly.
Creation going on, but not quite.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this results in a filamentous structure, which is very much like a neural network. And in fact, neural networks, which are constructed by our scientists, have shown that they have both memory and learning capacity.
Now, let me ask you, Ron, to stop right there. This is fascinating. So the ether, or the eye ether, as Ron Pearson perceives it to be, is constantly being created and shows and reflects many of the same characteristics of a neural network. Imagine that, a vibratory ether that we can't measure yet, which is everywhere in the universe, one universal neural network, which could be linked to our individual consciousness. In other words, we've all got a piece of the pie, and the math and the theories all work, no conflicts. It's quite remarkable, and we'll be back in just a minute with Ron Pearson and Michael Roll. Back with Michael Roll, talking with Ron Pearson. I want to go over this one item again, Ron, and then get back to Michael. The idea of the eye ether, this ether with an eye, being a living, if you will...
The reason I call it that is because the eye stands for intelligent.
I understand. I've got you. Neural network intelligence, yeah. It is the spontaneous formation, continually being formed. It's a living, if you will, neural universal network of energy, of intelligence, which we think may be equated, say, Ron and Michael, to what we call the God or universal consciousness, whatever. And here on the planet, of course, all the great religions claim to have their answer, their particular motif of how it should be perceived and so forth and so on. Those are human constructs, by and large. All great religions basically say the same good things, which start with the golden rule. And we all have that voice within us that may well be the voice that is connected to this neural network that is universally wide, spontaneously being formed all the time, a filamentous network, something that is all over the place and is on, again, a slightly different frequency, a channel, than we are on right now. Okay, Ron, anything to add to that before I go back to Michael?
All right.
Was that okay? Did I sum it up all right?
Not quite.
All right. Well, I'm not a scientist.
This ether is a background.
I understand.
Which then throws up various matter systems, of which ours is just one, and the other matter systems are those of spirit. In other words, the consciousness can be transferred from one background or from one material to another, on one frequency to another. The background is universal to all of them.
It's fascinating.
Universal to it's a background.
So that's the medium.
All these
that's right.
Of matter.
That is the medium, and by dialing and selecting different frequencies, they're all coming from that medium.
Yes.
And part and parcel of it. Okay, this is extraordinary. Now, the day will come when this background energy life form will probably be admitted, and let's hope it comes in our lifetime. If Ron and Michael have anything to say about it, it will. Michael, that was a little bit of physics, but very well stated, elegantly so, by Ron, who has done some amazing work at not rethinking these theories and refining them, but sort of setting them aside and coming back with something that is pragmatic, utilitarian, and logical.
Well, it's so exciting. Ron will go down in history as the man who discovered the spirit world. I mean, this is tremendous. Let's get it clear to your listeners what angle I'm coming from. I follow your great founding father, Thomas Paine, who said, my country is the world, and my religion is to do good. Now, we don't want to upset all the religionists, because they're being proved right here. The only people who are going to be upset by this, Jeff, are the people who have started from the base of when you're dead, mate, you're dead. That's who's going to have to be pushed aside. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping all the religionists, especially people who follow the ethics of Jesus, are going to fall in line with us. Because they're absolutely right. The reported sayings of Jesus are the same as my hero, the Greek scientists and philosophers. They all said the same as Jesus, you see, that we all survive death and And as you sow, so you will reap, and do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Right. Well,
so we don't want to upset the religionists. They're basically right, you see.
Right. Well, really, that's true. All right. They're trying to say the right things, but the corruption of the power aspect of control over so many people is nearly absolute on the planet.
And that, yes, it's the basics that are right. You see that we do survive death. Well, we have a soul that separates from the physical body, and they're going to have to start rewriting all their ancient doctrines and dogmas because they disagree. The priests disagree with what Jesus said. He said to the chap next to him when he was dying, "This day you will be with me in paradise." That's exactly what the science is saying. We're immediately reunited with our loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's the priests who invented all this business about resting in peace, waiting for Judgment Day. That's going to have to go now. They're going to have to rewrite all the ancient doctrines and dogmas that caused all the trouble and killings, you see.
Yeah. All right, let's talk more about these mediums who are able to manifest spirit energy.
Yes, well, we now know that all mediums are. Let's get it clear to people why we have to go to a medium. It's exactly the same as why you have to use a television set to see the invisible signals hitting your aerial. A television set is only a medium.
Or a telephone to talk to someone else.
That's right, yes. You've got the other one, of course, is a microscope. You can't see microbes without a microscope. But it's all to do with subatomic physics. And if we're going to contact people in the invisible part of the universe, the only way to do it at the moment is through a human machine, if you like, because the human mind and brain is a far more sophisticated machine than anything invented by human beings at the moment. So that's why we have to go to a medium, because they have the ability to make that connection with people.
Now, does it take a medium time and energy? Does it deplete them to be able to act as a medium?
I don't think so. You couldn't get anything more wonderful than the medium I work with, where as many as six recently deceased people were walking around the room.
And
they didn't take it out of the medium too much. Every half an hour they had a break, and she had a cup of coffee, then went back into trance, and the same thing happened again. But she managed all right.
I should say, it sounds marvelous, to put it mildly. Six from the other side walking around the room. Sound impossible? Let's come back and follow Michael Roll's explanation of that right after this very short timeout. And a lot of email questions coming in. I'll try to open the phones next hour for some questions, see what we can do about that. And glad you were here, and we will be back. Okay, and we're back. Ron Pearson and Michael Roll live from Great Britain, the wonderful English countryside, still in dark over there right now. And they are presenting some amazing material tonight. So tell us about this medium and six people who had matriculated to the other venue, shall we say, in the room, walking around. How did that happen? And we've got, and the last time you were on, we had some people who had been able to see, two women, I remember at least, who had been able to see their deceased children.
Yes, that's the wonderful thing about it. They were recently deceased. The first great experiment, of course, was carried out by Sir William Crookes, and he published his work in 1874. But all he had was just one person materializing on a regular basis, and this person had died so long previously, he was unable to get relations there to check her out. That was a very important thing missing from his experiment. But with our contemporary medium that I worked with, as many as six recently deceased people were fully materializing, walking around the room, and they were as solid as you, Jeff, when they materialized. So we were able to do the scientific exercise of getting them reunited with their loved ones who are still alive on Earth.
Were they able to hug them?
Oh, yeah. They were as solid as you and me for the short time they're on Earth. And as you know, Jeff, nothing happened yesterday in the laws of physics. It doesn't happen today.
Mm-hmm.
So our ancestors witnessed this, and that's when they jumped to the wrong conclusions and thought the people coming through were angels, devils, gods, or Big Daddy God himself.
Mm-hmm.
The story connected with Jesus, exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He materialized in front of his disciples, and understandably they thought something supernatural had happened. But now, thanks to these discoveries in physics, we can now mark the work of our ancestors. Jesus is the 17th Savior God known to historians, and all previous 16 had exactly the same story. They were seen again physically by their mates after they were died, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can now look back at the past and say, my goodness, this is wonderful. Sure, Jesus proved survival by appearing in front of his disciples physically, and that's what we're witnessing at our experiments. And these experiments, of course, have all been hushed up. And I'm screaming foul from the rooftops and making sure that people like Jeff Rentz tell the world about it.
Well, we're here to do that. I'm just wanting now to go into a session with a materializing medium. I think our listeners are more than intrigued. They'd like to have a better mind picture of that. So take us into one of your experiences, materializing medium, room, bereaved parents or whomever is there. Lights, candles, what do we have? What's going on? Tell me.
Well, in the old days, the mediums, materialization mediums, worked in what's known as a red light. So you had a certain amount of sight as well as all the other senses working. But it was the heavy ectoplasm that they take from the medium to form a temporary sort of spacesuit for scientists in the etheric world to teleport people from their wavelength into our physical world. That's what killed Helen Duncan. When the police raid happened, the heavy ectoplasm that they took from the medium rushed back into Helen Duncan's body, and that killed her. She died a few weeks later of internal hemorrhaging. So the scientists in the etheric world have been working ever since 1956, when Helen Duncan was killed, to refine the ectoplasm. So now when they fully materialize, it's much finer. They say it's still there. When you touch them, you can't feel that there's anything covering them, but it's been refined. And it doesn't matter now, Jeff, because we now have what they didn't have a few years ago, infrared cameras, laser cameras, and image intensifiers. So it doesn't matter the fact that it's in the dark anymore. We've now got the equipment to film perfectly, just as if it's in broad daylight, when they materialize.
And so what we're looking for is one courageous materializing medium to come forward and work with you or Ron or Gary Schwartz, whatever, in a laboratory setting to bring one person, one time, for even 10 seconds back in. Well, I'm just saying, it's got to be repeatable. I understand what you're saying, but we need to start somewhere. So we need to get something on tape. And then from there we can build.
That's right.
That's what you're hoping for.
And Dr. Peter Wadhams from Cambridge University is in touch, of course. He qualified at the Cavendish Laboratory, his physics degree.
Yeah.
And man in charge of the Cavendish Laboratory at Cambridge University is a Nobel laureate called Professor B.D. Josephson. And, of course, it's got to be somebody right at the top like that who finalizes the experiments and publishes. And that's what we can do. Peter Wadhams has got an intro there, so we'll do the initial experiments and perfect them. Then we'll bring the big boys in to do the publishing and the filming, of course, to oversee the filming. Then nobody can call them frauds.
Right.
As you know, they had to wait for Sir William Crookes and Professor Charles Richer to die before they honed in on them as liars and cheats and frauds.
Right, right. Let me go back to Ron now. Ron, what is your view of Crookes and his work and Sir William Crookes?
Wonderful work. I think he's one of my heroes. Yes, I agree with Michael that the way he's been treated is abominable.
If we can, Ron, let us bring our listeners up to speed. And let me go back to Michael for this right after the break, then I want your opinion about it. Michael, get ready to, after the break, please, give us a little biographical sketch of Sir William and what he did indisputably and what happened to him and others. And I want to set the stage and kind of paint the picture of this brilliant work in the so-called paranormal, which is nothing more than the manifestation of an invisible background medium, right here. The paranormal is easily explicable and understandable. It's not a problem. Be right back in just a couple minutes. Stay with us. Okay, and we're back. All right, Michael. Sir William Crookes.
Yeah.
When did he live and what did he accomplish? For our people who don't know, and it should be a name that, again, is one of those names that at some point in time is pulled out of the darkness and given its proper place. And I think that will happen.
Well, thanks to the Jeff Rentz show, indeed, because the attack on Crookes is absolutely outrageous. The propaganda which they're getting away with is that Crookes went completely mad and started dabbling in the religion of spiritualism.
Ah, yes.
Nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to prove that, anybody can go to the encyclopedia and look up X-rays. And you'll see immediately that Sir William Crookes was the great pioneer of nuclear physics. It's all subatomic physics, dealing with the invisible part of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't be able to watch television if it wasn't for Sir William Crookes, because he invented the cathode ray tube. This is the sort of caliber the scientists were dealing with. And when he died in 1919, so vicious was the attack on him, they couldn't attack him when he was alive. He was too big a scientist.
He held
the Order of Merit. He was knighted. They don't come any higher than this scientist. So they had to wait for him to die before they attacked him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come down to us now as a liar, a cheat, a crank, a fraud. And they also tagged on that he was a sex maniac, that he was having sexual relations with the young medium he worked
with.
See how vicious it is?
It's as vicious as it gets, you bet. And you're right, they did have to wait till he died before they dared take him on, because he was too formidable in life.
The bottom line was that he looked into this life after death business because as a pioneer of subatomic physics, he realized that they were coming from the invisible part of the universe. And luckily for us, he came across a materialization medium, a young 16-year-old medium called Florey Cook.
Mm-hmm.
And he, cut a long story short, he and worked for Florey Cook and other mediums as well, physical-type mediums. And he published his work in the top scientific journal of the day, the Quarterly Journal of Science, the results of his experiments, where he actually proved by repeatable experiments under laboratory conditions that we survived death. And then other international teams of scientists then repeated the experiments with their own mediums in different parts of the world, namely Professor Charles Richet, a Nobel laureate for medical science. Hardly an idiot, and this is a statement which is an absolute killer.
Mm-hmm.
There is ample proof that experimental materializations should take definite rank as a scientific fact. That's the angle I'm coming from and Ron's coming from, that the experiments have been done, carried out, but suppressed. And when you give the website out, it's all on there and everybody can check out what I'm saying. I'm not asking anybody to believe me. I'm asking them to check it out.
All they got to do is do the work.
Yeah.
Crookes' subatomic physics.
That's right.
Subatomic. Let's go back to the eye ether of Ron Pearson. Ron, subatomic. How sub are we, and how can we make that understandable for people?
Well, we've already talked about it, the ether, my ether, which is this filamentous network.
Uh-huh.
That's a subatomic medium, but it isn't to be confused with subatomic physics, in that the atom is made of subatomic particles.
Mm-hmm.
The electron is one of the subatomic particles, and the proton is another one, and the neutron is another subatomic particle of which the atoms are built.
Yes.
Well, I'm going below that and saying there's a background medium which actually creates these subatomic particles, and it does it. The only thing it can do is to create waves. And this neural network, all it can do physically is to create waves, which it does. And then these waves are organized by the intelligence which it has. And what it does is to focus the waves. And this focusing act creates the particle. Then the waves spread out. And in doing so, they create a gravitational force. This is my quantum wave theory of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that the whole of the matter system is a deliberate creation by this background mind.
Real simple. So subatomic is not, and I wanted to get people clear on that, it's not just smaller than atomic particles, it's way down there. It's a whole different, completely different medium. From it springs what we see as subatomic. Why is it that physics have had such a difficult time trying to understand gravity, which seems, you know, it's right here on the desk, you just hold something up and drop it, there it is, there's gravity. But they still haven't been able to really get hold of it. Magnetism presents another problem as well, too.
Well, the gravity problem has really been caused by them, in my view, going completely off track in following Einstein.
because Einstein's theory, well, it contained internal contradiction anyway, but it simply won't fit in with quantum theory. And in trying to struggle a way to match these up, they've got in a mess. You have to drop it out altogether and start afresh, and when you do that, you find that you get a theory, this quantum wave theory of gravity, which in fact fits the facts just as well as Einstein, but it's fully quantum compatible.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes further than that and shows things. It enhances quantum theory by showing how quantum theory works.
Mm.
Quantum theory is based on wave-particle duality. So the subatomic particles sometimes appear like waves. That's why it's called subatomic. So that's why it's called wave-particle duality. And there's no proper explanation for this as yet. But the theory of the ether gives an explanation because it shows that this is the only way that the particles be made. It can only make waves, and so the particles are made out of waves. So it's not surprising that you have a wave-particle duality.
Oh, it makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. This is very simple and understandable. Michael, when people have these experiences with loved ones who have departed, a nudge on the shoulder, an aroma in the room of a perfume or a pipe or some favorite activity that is hinted at, a chair will rock, a door will close, and so on and so forth, a sense, a feeling of someone close by. Explain in your words how that manifests itself without a materializing medium. This is just sheer energy coming from the subatomic ether, or ether, as Ron calls
it. That's right. As Ron said, you must get on board that every single thing is coming from that invisible part of the universe. Suns, moons, galaxies, everything, including us. We've come from there, and we go back there. And when we go back there, and we find we're alive still, we're so keen to get through to our loved ones, and that's how they're able to... So many millions of people have had this personal experience of their loved ones, as you say, with perfume or a flash of their image or something like that, because they tell us that everybody has this mediumistic tendency. You must remember, our mind is of the etheric world. The physical brain and body are left behind, but the mind carries on. Because, as you know, if you cut the head in half of a dead person, the brain is still there.
Are we playing a role, then, in the manifestation of some of these contacts from the other side as a medium would? In other words, you say we all have that materialistic medium ability to one degree or another. But can someone manifest here without a conduit, without a loved one being necessarily involved with it? Can they just push through from that other vibrational area?
Well, I'm sure that does happen, yeah. But to do it properly and to satisfy science, we're going to work.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I'm just talking about
But what we're doing is backing up all these experiences, aren't we? Well, Crookes did that with his repeatable experiments, and Professor Richet. They backed up all the hearsay that's been going on for thousands of years.
What were some of the things that Crookes did in a nutshell for our listeners? Just give us some ideas here.
Well,
you talked about the young woman medium, yes, okay, but give me more.
Well, he actually, he worked with another medium, a great medium called D.D. Hume, where he actually, in the vicinity of Hume, he actually made an accordion play by itself, playing a tune. And he did it on a very scientific basis by putting a Faraday cage around the accordion to make sure that no outside influence could touch it. And there was the accordion playing by itself.
Inside a Faraday cage.
Yeah, so what was happening is somebody, an invisible person, was making that accordion play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one of our great scientists who's reporting this, and he reported it in a scientific journal. So it's all there. It's all his work is there to be checked out. And if you link that now with Ronald Pearson's missing mathematics, the reason it didn't break through when these scientists did these repeatable experiments is because they didn't have the mathematical theory they could write on the blackboard, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But of course, they were the pioneers of radio and television, Sir William Crookes, Sir Oliver Lodge. And they said, well, we think it's in another wavelength, as you said in your introduction.
Mm-hmm.
We're just dealing with one wavelength interfering with another wavelength.
Will we at some point in time perhaps be able to build a device that might act as a materializing medium?
Well, with the incredible advances in the last 100 years in science, Jeff, I'm sure the answer to that is yes. It won't be long before we will be able to phone up our loved ones in the next world. That's going to happen in the next 100 years, I'm sure of it.
Right. There are stories of people seeing things on television. Tesla, of course, was quite convinced he was able to hear from the other side.
Yes.
Intelligence and so forth.
This is the big breakthrough. It's going to happen, obviously. This is so exciting, the future now, with taking all this on board. And people need never be frightened of dying. It's a tremendous adventure. When our old physical bodies pack in, it's only designed to last for a very short period of time.
So many people have so-called near-death experiences, and they go over and they come back.
That's right.
The stories are, they're all different, but they're all the same, and it's remarkable. The feeling of complete peace, the feeling of completely no stress, no tension, nothing, love, happiness, it's all there, and waiting, apparently. Be back. After the top of the hour, we'll try and take some phone calls next hour if you have questions about loved ones, communication from the other side, how to do it, how long it might take, under what circumstances. We also have to be careful of frauds. There are lots of them out there, so we need to talk about that as well. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Michael Roll and Ron Pearson, so stay right there.